Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
If you're in downtown Alpharetta and you like fresh seafood, go see my buddies Travis and Andy at Chiringa. It's located in City Center. And if you're going to Grayton Beach on 30A for fall break, spring break, or summer break, go see the sister restaurant Chiringo. Have yourself a frosé and tell them Ben Burnett sent you.
This is the Ben Burnett Show, the only show in America that features a one-term has-been retired politician that nobody knows.
Welcome in to the Ben Burnett Show. My name is Ben Burnett. My guest today is Brian Robinson of the Robinson Republic. Brian, welcome in.
Thanks, Ben. Glad to be here.
Man, you've got your hands in a lot between media obligations and political campaigns, and sometimes you're out front and sometimes you're not. Tell everybody what you do by day.
I run a public affairs communication shop. That's how I pay my mortgage. I am on TV and radio and quoted in a lot of national publications about Georgia politics, but none of that pays the mortgage, right? And so, you know, I have a background in politics and political communications. I was Governor Deal's communications director, which is how most people first kind of got to know me. And I was on Capitol Hill, you know, basically anonymously for 7 years in the Georgia delegation before I worked for Governor Deal's 2010 campaign. And so the stuff I work in on day in and day out, I do some politics still. I can't do a lot because it's so time consuming and so stressful. And I can, you know, you can't take on every race that you would love to be a part of if you're a junkie like me. I want to be in everything, right? I want to be like in it, no matter if it matters to Georgia. I want to be on the playing field. And you just can't do that and also have a family and mental health.
I was going to say, and be a sane human being.
Right. So a lot of the stuff I work on is like when groups are trying to get legislation passed, I will work with them on communications around it and try to bring a public profile to their issue and to their perspective. We're not educating. We're trying to persuade.
Where did you grow up, Brian?
Well, this is actually a deep, dark secret, Ben. I was hoping you wouldn't ask this. I actually grew up in South Carolina, which is sort of an inside joke because I never talk about it because I'm so deeply ingrained in Georgia politics. But my dad—
I was born in Hawaii, so
Oh, really? That's way cooler.
Yeah, it's my dad was born at Fort Jackson, so that's a lot less cool, but that's also South Carolina.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, nobody's like, oh, that's so cool, you're from South Carolina. That never is said. But Hawaii, you know, people are like, yeah, that's great. My dad was a minister, and so he had a church in a tiny town in the southern part of South Carolina. It's the middle of nowhere. But my family's all from the Augusta area. So, you know, my classes growing up were half Gamecock, half Clemson Tiger, and then one Bulldog, me. So when I got to be a senior in high school, my parents moved back to Augusta. And it just happened to be the first year of the Hope Scholarship. Ding, ding, ding. And so I got to go and be a Georgia Bulldog for 4 years, which is all I ever wanted to be.
All you ever, that was before it got to be impossible to get into, too.
I would not have been a Georgia Bulldog.
if it was 2022.
Yeah, I would. I taught at Georgia in 2016. I taught a semester there, public affairs communications, and very proud of like where my students are today. I would love to go over that, but my first day as their quote-unquote professor, and you have to put quotes around it because I'm woefully underqualified in my academic credentials, I told them, you're being taught this class by someone who could not get into your school today. Those are the facts.
Yeah, you guys are all smart at this point. What that university has transformed into, I mean, athletically and academically, it is like if you've been in Athens at all in the last 5 years, it is amazing to see what a quality education and an even more quality football team will do for a city and a state.
Incredible. And I was there during some dark years.
Yeah, oh yeah. I think everybody, you know, there's been lots of, are we going to be bowl eligible?
No. And that was at 96, we weren't. Like, we had a losing season. We lost to Southern Miss. We got beat by Vandy at home one of my years. Florida came in and beat us by 50. It was awful.
And I tell everybody, like, enjoy it because it'll happen again. It may be a long time, but, like, you'll get your turn in the woodshed. I think Alabama's starting to kind of teeter over where it's like,
I agree.
Hey, man, are we going to have to go be – like regular for a little while?
And they can't take it. Right? They can't take it. Like for us as Georgians, I mean, we have so many scars.
You spent so much of your life there. It's like, oh, well, we're back.
I mean, I still, until Kelee Ringo's feet hit the ground in the national championship game, my only thought was, how are we going to lose this?
Yeah.
There's going to be something creative.
Between being a Georgia fan and an Atlanta Braves fan.
And
like,
a Falcons fan.
This is going to be creative.
Yes. I mean, is there anything that tops 28-3, though? I mean, that is – that no one in history will be better than us at that.
When you have when you get out of school and you clearly have some sort of pull on you from a public affairs political – spotlight.
Yeah.
I mean, who's the first group of people to make a mistake and take you?
Well, great question. I was a journalism major at
which is handy
at UGA. Yeah. And actually I have my degree no longer exists. I had a newspaper degree and they don't even have those anymore. And I started out at the AJC, and I always wanted to be in politics. I mean, from the time I was a kid, I was the one who would go out in the front yard and pick up the paper and take out the wrapper and like bring it.
Wanted to read it.
Yeah, would bring it in the car when mom drove us to school, you know? And I would see quotes in the paper from these people who work for statewide elected officials, and I just thought, how cool is that, that they get to be, their name is in the paper, and they get to talk about politics, and sometimes they're funny, and
occasionally they're in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, this looks like, I can't believe people get paid to do this. I would love to do it. But I didn't know anybody in politics.
Right.
Like I said, my dad was a rural minister. I mean.
In another state.
In another state, right. So I had no network. I had nobody who could guide me or mentor me. I don't know how you got a job in politics, right? And now I realize, like, they'll eat you up. They want anybody to show up at the door and volunteer.
You mean you have a pulse?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Can you knock on a door?
Well, I get the question all the time as I just continue. I sat in elected office for 4 years as I kind of moved on, and I've just raised money for a handful. If you were a Republican running for office in my delegation, state delegation, and they're like, do you know how rare – what you just did is? And I was like, no, isn't that what you're supposed to do? And they're like, yeah, we would hope, but nobody does that.
Nobody does it. No, that's right.
And so it kind of, when I got an opportunity at Appen Media Group, who runs all the North Fulton papers, they said, you're crazy enough as an elected official. Will you come host a podcast? I was like, well, can I talk about anything? And they're like, we don't care. And I took it. And to sit here and wind up here, you kind of wonder sometimes how it happened.
Yeah.
But the truth is that the pond is not even a pond. It's a puddle.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who will come play for a little while, but there's not a lot of people like yourself or Greg Bluestein or Chip Lake or the guys who have done it for a long – Bobby Sapro, guys who have done it for a long time. And you know, none of you guys are old.
Right, I feel old.
Do what you get on the campaign trail, and everybody's 21. And
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Let's go. I was like, oh, I love you, idealistic people. But
everybody's like, you know, let's go drinking. I'm like, only if I can take tomorrow off.
Yeah,
that's the only way that's going to work out.
Are you sure? But it is. I tell anybody who's interested in public service, like, man, if you send 5 emails, you will get 4 back.
Yeah.
And it is not like that in any other industry.
No, we work at a very different pace. And it's not a healthy lifestyle, Ben. That's the thing, right? I mean, it's not something long-term that people think, God, I want to be like answering text about social media posts on Saturday at 11 a.m. for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
You know, it's a grind, and you do have to love it. And I've seen some of those people come in at 21 and 22 who get into these political jobs through some contact or an internship that worked out that they weren't particularly pursuing. And those people burn out really quick. Unless you like, you love this, it's just not for you.
Yeah.
Right. I always say it's sort of like having a meth habit. You know, you have to love it to deal with the pain.
All right. We're going to use that as the clip is when we tease the episode on Twitter and Instagram. That is, you got to love it, like you've got a meth habit. When you talk to me about eventually getting entrenched into Governor Deal's world, yeah. And Dave Warner, who is a very, very good friend of mine, was a lobbyist at Delta for a long time, lived on my hall my freshman year at Samford. And he wound up transferring, but we were always friends.
Yeah.
And it's so to the tune that it's a puddle. Like, it's a common interest he will always have. And I know he's kind of moved out of that role at Delta.
But still at Delta.
But he's if I needed advice, he's somebody who I'd call that would tell me the truth. Yeah. So I have a friend.
He can be kind of brutal, really.
From that, hey, bring it, man. I don't want you to lie to me. Talk about getting entrenched in Governor Deal's world and how you got to know him.
Yeah. Well, let me finish up the other answer. I left college and went to work at the AJC, and I was a copy editor there for 5 years. And so this was, around the turn of the century, and I was thinking, there's a problem with this business model. And I'm in my 20s, and I just don't see this being a great career path.
And there is a business. There's a flaw with the business model. But
no,
go on.
No doubt about it. There is. And shortly after I left and kind of got into politics, they were doing cutbacks. So I really did kind of get out just in time to avoid what has been a really low quality of life career in a lot of ways over the last 20 years. Hopefully it'll get better. The AJC folks seem to be happier than they've been. But the last 20 years have been rough. There's no other way to say it. And a lot of the jobs have disappeared. So I did the right thing. You just mentioned Chip Lake, and I got to know Chip in 2002, the year that Phil Gingrey was elected to Congress from the old 11th district, and they hired me to go do their comms. I was in my mid-20s, so I moved to Washington, worked for Gingrey for 2 years, and then my college roommate's dad won a seat in Congress, Lynn Westmoreland.
Yep.
So I went and worked for Lynn for 5 years. Lynn was a big supporter of this largely unknown congressman named Nathan Deal, who decided in foolhardy fashion to run for governor in 2010. And they started in 2009. I never really knew the Deal people on the Hill. They were, kind of off doing their own thing. But one day Lynn and Chip came to me and they're like, would you like to go down to Gainesville and work on the campaign? Yeah, they really need somebody who can help with their messaging and deal with their media stuff. And so I was in my mid-30s by this point in time, and Chris Riley, the governor's then Congressman Deal's chief of staff, called me in March of 2010 and said, would you come be on the campaign? I said, yeah, I've got a mortgage in Alexandria, Virginia, though. So, I need a place to stay for free. And so I lived in Nathan Deal's backyard.
No, that's great.
For 8 months in my mid-30s.
People think it's a highfalutin gig, and it is not necessarily.
No. I was living in his backyard. It was a nice little cottage back there, actually. I wouldn't mind living there now, frankly. It was a pretty good little sweet place they had. But I was in my mid-30s. It's sort of a weird thing to be doing, as a white-collar professional, to be living in somebody's backyard on a fly-by-night job. But we won that primary by 3,000 votes.
Right.
And then went into the general election. It was obviously a red wave year. We beat former Governor Roy Barnes. And then I went into the governor's office and did the whole first term as his deputy chief of staff for communications, and then did the reelect. And about 8 months into the reelect, that 2014 sucked, man. I was just telling this to Kemp's people earlier this week. Reelections are the worst because everybody thinks, oh, you're the incumbent, you're going to win. Well, not always. And so you're expected to win. So if you lose, it's particularly bad. And now, unlike as a challenger, you have a lot to lose.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of people invested in you. And so it's just a grind, and it was not a happy warrior experience the way that 2010 was. But I wanted to recover after that, so I kind of kept the job for another 8 or 10 months and kind of took it a little easier than I had in the past, and then started my own business in August of 2015. And that's been 7.5 years, and it's been great. It's very stressful owning your own business, and it's a lot of work, but also very rewarding, and you get to do what you want to do. And hey, I can come be on the Ben Burnett Show.
Thank you.
And there's no bureaucracy going, well, Brian, I don't know that we want to be doing anything public facing. I don't have to deal with that crap. I just go say what I want to say.
When you talk about a handful of, when you step out on your own, who are some of the people that took a bet on you? And the relationships, man, that you'd had, and how did they help? Look, it's a team game to some degree. Like, if you can start your business, if you have no clients, it's more of a hobby.
Yeah. That's true.
Who are a handful of people that you really give a lot of your business's credit for? Because I've seen you around on social media for ages, and you know, not everybody knows everybody, and I'm kind of newer to it in this space, which nobody else seems to occupy, which is awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like I can call anybody and be like, sure.
Yeah, yeah.
To the tune that it's a puddle, they're like, Earn Media? Done. talk about some of those early clients and early wins that you really helped make your organization today.
Yeah, one of my first, really, even before I left the governor's office, the Metro Atlanta Chamber, which had their annual meeting next door to your studio this morning at 7:15, they reached out because, you know, they had several big issues in the 15-16 session, 17 session, that they really needed somebody who was from the deal orbit to engage on. And so they brought me on, and they've just been fantastic. It's just it is a group of people that is so energetic and passionate about serving Metro Atlanta and building this economy and building the workforce pipeline. I know that none of that stuff is necessarily sexy issues, but it's the stuff that matters to our lives, and they just do a great job with it. I've loved working with those guys. Day in and day out, you don't ever know. Sometimes it's like a little mom and pop that just needs some help or needs a little bit of attention. So I got involved a couple of years ago with a group of dudes who were creating a hemp processing facility.
Oh, wow.
And making CBD products. And
that might not be as small as it was then.
No, I know. I know. I'm hoping for their sake that it really booms, because they're just great guys. And it's the only Georgia-grown processing facility that we have right now. Several people have tried it, but they're the only ones who survived. So you don't really ever know. I'll say this about starting your own business. The people you think are going to help you don't. And the people you never thought of as helping you all of a sudden become the safety net. And you're just greatly appreciated. There's a couple of lobbying firms who, like, they had issues coming up, and they brought me in. They recommended me to work those issues going through the General Assembly, doing the communication stuff. Those guys know who they are, and I am eternally grateful, because that first 6 months, you're terrified. If you're not terrified, then you must have a trust fund, because, yeah. Right? Because you don't know where your next paycheck's coming from, you know, because you don't get a paycheck. You have to go out there and fight and earn everything. And the beauty of my business model for my clients is they can get rid of me at any time, right? They don't have to pay me benefits or give me vacation time. The downside of all of that is they can get rid of me at any time.
Yeah.
Really hard to plan when it's like that.
When you have – so you have a relationship, because you helped organize him to put him on my show with Attorney General Chris Carr.
Yeah.
Who
– also a client.
Also a client. And, man, he is I was very impressed when he came through, just at the answers and the honesty and integrity. And I think people were kind of surprised by some of it. One, because he's not necessarily the mold of the statewide elected officials in 2022. But, I'm super happy, as somebody who lives, you know, in the Metro Atlanta area, to see a Republican who's conservative, who's got a pretty good long track record of being able to persuade people over. Because most of the time, and it's nothing against Governor Kemp, it's nothing against Burt Jones, it's nothing against Tyler Harper. Like, that guy lives a mile from 285. And, like, that's a unicorn,
yeah,
in Georgia statewide politics. No, now
that's the absolute truth.
Did you help him cultivate messaging so that he could be there? And I know he's a very, very loyal friend to Governor Deal. And should be.
Yes he is, and a very loyal friend to Governor Kemp. There's a very tight bond there between the governor and Chris, but also between Chris and his wife Joan and the First Lady, Mrs. Kemp. Chris didn't need a whole lot of message development help from me. The role I played for him was more in driving his pre-existing message. You know, he's been focusing, coming out of COVID, on protecting lives and livelihoods, you know, hitting two things, like keeping the economy open and...
Man, everybody knows it by now.
Absolutely. Fighting stuff like vaccine mandates, keeping schools open, and then that's the livelihoods part. And then lives, that goes into some of the crime issue that we're dealing with, his work on human trafficking, his work on the gang task force, trying to protect communities, vulnerable Georgians. So lives and livelihoods, and
it's not partisan.
Right.
Or should, no, it, shouldn't, no, it shouldn't be.
No, I can tell you, I can give you some good stats on that, Ben, that are, will be enlightening. The only thing that I added was he was doing Lives and Livelihoods was, I said, so much of what you're doing, Chris, is also about fighting for freedom. How about we do Lives, Livelihoods, and Liberties? And that sort of became the catchphrase of the campaign, those three things. We tried to use it as much as possible to drive that message. You know, down ticket in Georgia is really hard to break through. I mean, we had this massive Senate race, this massive governor's race, and they were hoovering up tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars. And so when you go into communities to the donor class people and you ask for $2,000, they're like, we just raised $12,000 for Governor Kemp. Or, you know, and you get that a lot, right? I mean,
to the point, like Tyler Harper, who is a good dude, came and sat on my show, and I could have asked him on a Monday, and he'd have been in here on a Tuesday.
Yeah, yeah.
To your point that, you know, you asked somebody for $2,000, and I said, well, how much money have you raised? Not knowing the answer, he's like, about $1.8 million. I was like, good for you, man.
Yeah.
Because that is hoofing it.
No, it is. To do that in an ag commissioner race is astounding. And I can tell you, I don't know. There's no situation that I'm aware of other than the kind of the Senate races that are going on right now where money just kind of falls from the sky, where you just wake up and check your computer in the morning and see how much came in over the internet.
Yeah.
That's not what it's like. If you are an ag commissioner candidate, a labor commissioner candidate, even an attorney general or secretary of state, it is a treadmill every day.
Every day. You've got to love it. And no one does. And no one really loves that.
No.
I wrote him a check for $500, and I did, and I knew I had Chris coming the next day, and Chris said, I've raised over $4 million. I was like, you know what? I'm going to write Tyler a check. I hope you don't take it personally. He goes, that's exactly what you should do.
Yes.
And I was like, hey, that's cool, man. He's like, yeah. He goes, I don't take it the wrong way, but I do. Chris is, and Joan is, I mean, what a sounding board.
Yeah.
You can't find a better sounding board probably in America than to be able to ask somebody who's worked for Zell Miller and Senator Isaacson and Kelly Loeffler. Yeah. I was like, yeah. I told her, I said, you know, I said, it's campaign season. I'm going to have your husband. I was like, I when you come sit in that chair, I want you to stay for 2 hours.
Yeah,
because,
I know.
Because I can only imagine some of the gangster things you've seen in Washington, D.C. I said, people will love it.
Yeah, she's been in the room for a lot of stuff that matters for Georgia, and she's just a top-notch person. The best thing about losing the Senate races was Joan got to come home, move into our office space with a group of us, and so I get to hang out with her a little bit every day, and she's just a super cool person.
Smart.
And very smart, yeah. And she's very grounding. And, you know, one thing I like about having her around is somebody does some political consulting. When you're dealing with a candidate and family that's never been in politics, they don't know how this works. And so they have all these ideas because they think they're going to reinvent the wheel because they're thinking, why has no one ever done this? And people like me got to come in and be the bad guy all the time. Well, no one's ever done it because it's a stupid idea. That's why. Because it doesn't work. And, you know, and with Joan, you have somebody who's got that political background who kind of gets the joke of a lot of it. And, of course, Chris does, too. I mean, he's a former staffer.
Yeah, he knows.
Which makes a big difference. And so one thing that's great about them is they don't sweat the small stuff that a lot of candidates do because they do understand the bigger picture, which is extraordinarily rare. I mean, people in politics who are in elected office, the ones with the titles, unlike me, they
have no perspective.
And they don't understand politics.
Yeah.
Succeeding in politics does not equal understanding politics. I can promise you that. I have rarely seen an exception to that statement.
When you get to a place where people start asking you about media obligations and things like that, how do you carve that out for yourself? And was that business-minded? Was it somebody just called you? Because it's in – you. For those of you who don't know, Brian is a lot of places frequently. Probably more so when, like, there's a food fight going on.
Right.
But how do you create that lane for yourself? Is it the newspaper background? Is it
– No, it's not. I love politics. And when I got out of that being my daily life, I was always a staffer. And so I was always talking for someone else. And I was constrained by their politics.
Yeah.
I was constrained by their viewpoints. It wasn't my job to tell you what Brian Robinson thought or my analysis. It was my job to help them politically with a message that was a political winner. And once I was done with that, I still kind of do that professionally, develop that for other people. I just felt this pent-up desire to go and talk about politics from my perspective. And I reached out to Dennis O'Hare at WABE at the time. He's retired now. And I was like, you know, there's this Democrat guy named Theron Johnson, and I hear him on some stuff. He seems pretty good. How about we do a political show on WABE? And, of course, that's turned into Political Breakfast Podcast that we're on Wednesday mornings there. And from that point on, we started rolling into the 2016 election, which was mega interest. I mean, it was just like nonstop coverage.
Nothing like it.
It was nothing like it. And so Theron and I also went to one of the TV stations and pitched a TV show in 2015. And, you know, they kind of strung it out for 6 months, and it didn't happen because they didn't see the business model. They were wrong. I mean, 2016, they would have murdered. We would have killed in 2016 if we had had the show. But didn't happen. But nevertheless, we became regulars, like, on all the time. And once people see you and they realize you can string words together and you will answer the phone, that's that's the big part of it, is I answer the phone.
Be available.
I'm available, and I say yes. And I'm not afraid, you know. I deal with so many people with media, and everybody's just like, I don't want to talk about that, or what if they ask me this? And I just don't worry about that stuff. But, you know, I know what I want to say. I just want to say what I want to say.
I want to ask you this, because we're going to put this out. We're taking Thanksgiving off, which I'll edit all of this out. So you'll be the week before the runoff, which is prime, because this is like bonus coverage. When I thought that I wasn't going to have political people for like 5 or 6 weeks, I was like, well, politics in Georgia can be the gift that keeps on giving. And about the time the runoff is over, people are going to start declaring for president, and we'll be right back at it. So I've probably got a grand total of 4 episodes of people that are not in politics in the next probably 2 years from right now.
Yeah.
What did you make of President Trump's decision to announce, but prior to Walker and the runoff date? Is the guy just that self-absorbed?
I will say, I don't think that the consideration of Georgia came into play in this consideration.
Or anybody else?
Yeah. And I don't know what grand plan that they have, but, you know, I saw somebody make a good comment this week. What he's done by getting out this early is allow his potential competitors to sit back and watch how this plays out before taking any chances. Maybe this does take off. Maybe he catches fire like he did in 2015. Maybe once again he can just say whatever he wants and there's no consequences for him. I just don't think that's the case.
It is impossible to be the case, because whether people in the North and South Georgia will ever admit this with a straight face. And I recognize that Republicans refuse to acknowledge the gravity of what happened on January 6th and his responsibility or not responsibility in it. It turned 4 out of the 100 Republicans that you need in the state of Georgia off, to where they will never vote for him again, and it doesn't matter what the office is. I'm one of them. And it would kill me to go to the polls and vote for President Biden, and I would probably ruin myself in the future for saying that out loud, so I won't. But, man, it is – when you turn 4% of your electorate off, that you can't afford to lose.
Not in Georgia.
Not in Georgia. And let's be honest, if you look at Alabama and Mississippi, you can run up the score there as big as you want to. It doesn't matter.
Right.
There is not a chance. I had breakfast with a former United States senator in Sea Island about a month ago who said – at breakfast, that he knew he couldn't win a general election. That he knew that in his own heart couldn't win an election. So why is the man doing it again?
Right. I don't know. I don't.
And you have answers for everything.
I know. Let me answer this about the announcement and its timing. You know, Trump and Herschel Walker have a very close personal relationship that goes back 40-plus years from Herschel's time for the New Jersey Generals and the USFL. And I think that's a legitimate friendship and a legitimate relationship.
No question.
And I don't know what couldn't have waited till December the 7th. That's what I don't understand.
Correct.
But Walker's path to victory here, and this is anybody's game because a runoff is really, really hard. It is impossible to know what the electorate is going to look like or what issues are going to grab them between now and December the 6th. Sometimes something comes up that can drive those 4% that you're talking about to go one way. Those people who in Georgia are the deciders. You know, you only got to get a few people here to kind of get over the top.
Or lose a couple of people to not. You know, it's
yeah, no, exactly. Same, and you can. And one good way to lose those people is to stand up the day before the election and say, "I'm not going to vote for the Georgia Electoral College votes." That's a good way to make sure you don't get those votes. Walker needs to be able to post up on Warnock, and he needs to be able to post up in the macro fashion against Biden and his record and inflation and crime and liberal extremism. That needs to be Walker's message. And in a vacuum, he can kind of determine what his message is going to be. Well, Trump fills any vacuum.
Everywhere.
And so Warnock has the ability to post up on Trump, just like he did in 2021, successfully, I might add. And we didn't want that dynamic. And I'm not saying that it's deadly, that Walker doesn't have a pathway. Of course he does. Of course he does. But it just complicates matters for no reason. And the way I've put it in the media sources that have asked me is it's best if the 2024 cycle begins after the 2022 cycle ends. And that doesn't happen until Georgia says it does.
That is 100% fair. Well, I'll ask you, if you're in the turnout machine right now and you saw the Republicans, look, and your clients and the people you're closely affiliated with were at 53.8, you know, close to 54. Whether or not you know this at home, that's relatively decisive. But the turnout numbers, I think, for everybody were a lot, in both sides of the aisle, were a lot less than they necessarily thought were going to come to the polls. In total, where they all thought 4.4, 4.5, 4.6 million, and it was 3.9. 55,000 more people voted in 2022 than voted in 2018. And Georgia's seen more growth than that from a perspective. Where do you think the media, both sides of the aisle, where did we lose engaged citizens in this country and in this state? What's your, like, 30,000, because I don't know. And if I knew, I'd be running one of those races right now. Like, yeah. What do you think the shift is that needs to take place? And what do you think the missing message is? You think it's vision? Because we didn't get a lot of it. We got a lot of campaigning against the ideology of one party or the, you know, battle stations of abortion and, you know, and guns on the other. And I don't think that was really what I went to vote, you went to vote, all of Warnock's people went to vote, all of Kim's people went to vote. And we turned, there are people that got turned off. Like, what, if you had to pick a message or a theme that needs to change in these next 3 or 4 weeks, like, what is it? You think it's vision?
I do think it will be helpful for Herschel Walker to talk a little bit about inflation and maybe have a few items, nothing complex, nothing too deep, about how he would fight it, maybe a few items on crime. But if you listen to him on his stump speech, he is fairly substantive. I mean, he tells stories that ramble a little bit, but
so do I.
Yeah, don't we all? I mean, listeners of the podcast would be like, hey, pot, kettle, listening to me. But he talks about the border crisis. He talks about the transgender sports issue. He talks about inflation and crime. So there is substance to what he's talking about. And that's not obviously what stories get written about. But if you listen to him, it's substantive. If you look at what Stacey Abrams was saying, there was a lot of vision there. You know, she had the challenge as someone taking on an incumbent to give people a reason to fire their current employee and hire her. So she had to offer an alternative, and she talked about Medicaid expansion. She talked about her different approach to abortion. So there were numerous issues where we did have substantive policy disagreements, which is great. You know, at the end of the day, all politics is now national, and it's hard. It used to be all politics is local, and it's not anymore. You know, in 2020, if you ran for dog catcher, you had to tell people where you stood on Trump.
I'll tell you, I knocked doors in 2017 for my one term on the city council. And I'm just going to tell all of you who still listen, I showed up on your doorstep, and I knew whether you were a far-right Republican, a soft Republican, a soft Democrat, or a wild lefty. And I knew what I would talk to each of you about that I actually genuinely believed. And that was then, because the question I got at a third of the doors from Republicans are, do you like Donald Trump?
Yeah.
Then I'll vote for you.
Right.
And I was like, you may not, people don't ever believe it. If you listen to my show, you know I have a bias. I think your county commissions and your city councils have an immense amount of responsibility and deserve immense amount of credit for the betterment of your actual day-to-day life. And that goes up when you get to the General Assembly, and that goes up even when you go to national. It'd kill me to go to Congress because I couldn't stand to sit there and do anything and know that very little mattered except whether or not North Korea was hurling missiles at us.
Yeah.
So I tell people, like, the pyramid that you have in your brain is exactly upside down. But how do you, is there a way to transform that conversation so that what, and I think Governor Kemp did an incredible job, and he's not Ron DeSantis with the personality, and he's not going to fight you on every issue, even though he'll fight you on plenty of them.
Yeah.
I think that he struck the balance with his voting base as a guy who really did well in South Georgia, and then turned out, you know, there were precincts in Alpharetta where I'll still study maps, single precincts where he outperformed Herschel Walker by 300 votes out of 3,000. I was like, that's a lot.
No, it is. Yeah.
And, you know, I tell everybody, Herschel Walker, east of 400 in Alpharetta, do you know how many precincts he won? Zero. You know how many Governor Kemp won? Four.
Really?
That's a bellwether, man. That's when you talk about the suburban women, they're there.
Right.
And they carried Kemp, to his credit, and I think it was schools. I just want to know.
Schools is a big thing, man.
What do you see out of the – what is there a national issue where you can frame the conversation in 3 weeks and get yourself across that line? And if you were involved in that race, what's your one thing that I'd change or I'd do differently, or – How would you turn out people, because people pay you to?
I actually think that the message that Herschel Walker drove in the debate in Savannah is the right message.
It was killer. He did a great job.
And his message was...
And we were all surprised a little bit.
I think he outperformed expectations, I think is the phrase we all use. And he made Warnock own Biden's record. That was his job there, and he delivered it. He was repetitive, which I appreciate. People complain about it.
You got to hear it seven times.
But it's good messaging, right? To penetrate, you got to keep repeating it. And he is disciplined about it. And talking about Biden's voting with Biden 96% of the time, people think inflation's bad. People think crime is bad. They think the country's going in the wrong direction. Walker's got to make Warnock own all of that. He is the status quo. He's part of the problem. That's got to be the message. And is there some grand vision, some grand alternative vision? No. I mean, the fact of the matter is, if we're going to go tame inflation, nobody wants to go campaign on how you do that, because they all are crappy options. Like, there's no easy answer.
We have to stop printing money tomorrow.
We have to stop printing money. We have to raise interest rates. You know, they may have to, like, raise them to a point where they kind of force a recession of some sort. None of these are fun options to discuss on the campaign trail. I promise to bring you a recession, America.
Right?
That's not a great one. So that's sort of the dilemma. And you just run against, there's a problem and he's to blame. And that's all you can do. You can't really get much more complex than that.
To close, if there was an avenue that you wanted to pursue that you haven't yet, what is it? What does Brian Robinson want to – what does he want to see the business or the state or the country – what does he want to see that he doesn't have the opportunity to do today?
Well, since I was a little kid, I always wanted to drive the parking lot tram at Six Flags. That just seemed like such a stress-free, fun job. You know, you get a microphone.
Everybody's in a good mood.
Everybody's in a good mood. Yeah, you get a little microphone. You can tell the same jokes 60 times a day. And there are days when I do dream of having some job that's monotonous and like just stress-free, where I'm just like watching the time pass. But what would I like to do with the rest of my life?
Not I won't say that. What do you want to do with your business that you are not doing today? Like, what's something you want to scratch that you haven't had the right time hasn't come along, the right client hasn't come along? Yeah. Like, where do you want to grow?
Great question. And I don't know what the right client is because, you know, I keep a pretty big book of clients typically. And I'm a one-man business, so the bigger the book, the busier I am, the less time there is for family vacations and downtime. And
which is why everybody owns their own business, by the way.
Right.
Yeah, 100%.
If you want to succeed at it, it's really a lot of work. And I would like to, at some juncture, be able to get my head out from the day-to-day, you know, pounding it out work that I have to do, bring in some smart, skilled people who can do stuff I can't do, like graphic design, and then people who do have my skill set for projects that take more time than I have, like, you know, writing long form pieces for clients, for media placement, that kind of stuff. So that's how I'd like to grow. It's like bring some really smart people in to work with me and grow together. And one of these days, I would like to, if I had my druthers on what I really want to do, I would like, I mentioned that I taught at UGA, and it was a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun.
Too. Yeah.
Like my students, one of my students was Kemp's press secretary on this campaign. Another one is in the state house and just got elected to leadership this week.
So you feel a little bit of ownership over the molding young minds.
Yeah, you're very proud of seeing them
be successful.
Be successful, yeah. And so I would, you know, after I have enough money to live off of, that's the kind of job I'd like to do to fill my time. Once I no longer have to worry about, you know, getting my kid through school and all that stuff.
Well, Brian Robinson, man, thank you for making time for me today.
You bet. This has been fun.
It's been an interesting conversation. I'd love to have you back in the future. If there's one person you think I should get on my show that I haven't talked to, knowing the concept and knowing some of the guests and how I drive conversation, who would it be? Because Ella Dorsey said Kelsey Winger, and I said, you make that happen, I'm in. And I said, and by the way, there's any number of 300 people that I have probably interviewed over time that would be like, can I sit in on that one?
Man, I would need to think about that. But, you know, I would like, let's get Stetson Bennett in here.
How drunk were you after you won a national championship? Because you look real drunk 5 hours after it was over on Good Morning America.
Yeah, he sure did. He did it right, you know?
Yeah, well, thanks a lot for coming in, man. It's been another episode of the Ben Burnett Show. Have a great day, everybody. When it comes to building your business, no one knows it quite like you, but taking the next step to innovate it, grow it, expand it, that takes a special kind of know-how. The First Horizon Commercial Banking team in Atlanta brings a depth of experience and insights that builds on the bank's deep balance sheet capabilities. So you don't have to choose between building a bank that knows how to optimize your growth strategies and one that is fully equipped to help you execute every part of them. Visit firsthorizon.com to find a banker near you.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey Atlanta, Hudson Mason here. Is a new roof still on your to-do list, but you've been delayed due to rising home service costs? Well, here's a fantastic solution from Accent Roofing Service. Zero down, zero payments, and zero interest for a full year. That's right, you can get your new roof now and start paying next year. Act quickly because Accent's incredible offer of 000 with a 12-month deferred payment option for a lifetime roof system isn't going to last long. Contact the craftsman at Accent Roofing Service today, accentroofingservice.com.